me that you're around to do it, because it makes it kind of is almost an accountability thing as well, and it's like helps me feel like, yeah, I've got to do it.
It's like a ritual as well.
It is.
Same time of the week, and like it's almost near the end, almost the end of the week, and
yeah. And the fact that it's the end of the week helps, I think. You know, because it's like close off the week, and you know, I ain't going to do any work after Brain Food Live. You know, time to sit there, make a cup of tea, put your feet up. Anyway, we're live, everybody. We're live at Brain Food Live on air, episode 100, folks. 100. And by the way, thank you in the chat stream for reminding me on this. I totally forgot it was 100 episodes, and today was the day. So I just want to say thank you to everybody who supported the show. Thank you for everyone who's subscribed and watching. It's just kind of amazing. I was saying to Adam just before we came on air how amazing it is to think that, you know, we're still here after 100 of these shows. That's at least 2.5 years of weeklies. It's still enjoyable. I'm still enjoying. We're still enjoying having conversations with the community and topics we care about. So thank you very much, everybody. Let's kick off with a bit of a sound check. If you can hear me okay, everybody, please let me know. We are on Crowdcast. Pretty certain you can hear me on Crowdcast. We are also live streaming, I think, on... Are we doing it? No, we're not. I thought we would be, but we're not. Why is that not working? Crap. You know what? One thing that's really interesting is that if it breaks down, there's nothing we can do about it. So I think we should have been on LinkedIn or not. So I do not know why that is the case. So I'm sorry about that, folks. But we are on Facebook. So if you can hear us on Facebook, please let us know. Give me a like or a dislike or something like that. And we're not on Periscope. I think this is also the last week we could possibly on Periscope because it shuts down after this. We're going to maybe...
Is that in line with the 100th show? 100 shows and that's it, Periscope's off, because we were the only people using it now.
Honestly, we might have been the only people using it. It's basically what it is. So I want to do something I've never done before. So I hope people are going to not freak out, but I'm going to try and do a go live. It should go on LinkedIn via this thing. I've just pressed something. So if it goes chaotic, bear with me. And we'll see what happens. Who knows? Anyway, all fun and games. Let's get on with the show. Before we begin, we have a new sponsor this week. Very excited to announce our new sponsor, which is Occupop, a business I hadn't heard of until they got in touch with me late last year to say, hey, listen, we're really interested in the show. We want to support it. We want to get involved. But they're a really interesting tech company coming out of Ireland. Lots of cool tech coming out of Ireland, it turns out. And they are in the position where essentially they're a great ATS for companies that are upgrading for the first time to a dedicated software system. So if you're still wrestling with things like spreadsheets, or you're trying to do things on Google Docs or whatever it is, you're messing around, you know, trying to, cobble together some way of managing your recruiting, and you need an upgrade, Occupop is something worth checking out. I believe they've got a free trial as well for 14 days. So absolutely no reason why you shouldn't give this a shot. Here it is there. Do take a look. Let's get on with the show. We're talking about something really interesting today. We're talking about rejections, I think, candidate rejections, and we'll dive into that in short order. How do we do rejections better? Can we improve it? Is there a system or a model we can use and learn from? So it's going to be exciting to talk to a bunch of interesting people for that. But before we begin, we always review the newsletter from last week. So let's talk about that, Adam. Did you read it? And if so, what was interesting for you?
After of 100 shows, we've probably done 75 together. And I will probably in the future still have to remind you that I've got some kind of interest in employer branding. So because I've done it at least 5 times over 2.5 years. The Shopify video. This is what I call talent brand. So Shopify put out a video onto LinkedIn. It might have been elsewhere as well. I saw it on LinkedIn, which was, look, we're looking for opinionated developers And there's a guy actually says developers of Shopify are incredibly opinionated. And so I think that I've been preaching this for probably 10 years, that companies should be positioning hiring managers and people that are doing the jobs right at the front, making them famous, making them tell the truth, not highly glossed things, like just real, do it on a phone or do it on Zoom. And Shopify have done it and people have loved it. It's got like 10, 11,000 views on LinkedIn. And I cannot understand for the life of me why every employer is not doing this. Really good example of what I call talent brand.
On this note, it's so easy to do as well, isn't it? Because what they've done, by the way, check out the link stream there. What they've done is simply, you could just hand the mobile phone to a bunch of your team and get them to record some videos about and answering the question. So they asked a consistent question to a multiple number of people and just recorded their answers together. And very simply, you know, they've simply produced that. So great video. I think it takes about 2 minutes to watch it. Really, really easy to do. So get some inspiration on that. Go ahead and do it and see what you see. So yeah, excellent. I've just discovered, by the way, looking on the phone, what's happening with my with LinkedIn Live, it's actually just a blank screen. So I fully expect like multiple disconnects and like a reduction of my network as a result of that. So I have no idea why that is. I do beg your pardon. I'll figure it out at some other point. What else is interesting, man?
If the sound is on it, but there's just no image, that might be actually a preferable medium for the people that are consuming this content.
Yeah, I think they can hear me. So if people are hearing
well, they might just want to hear you, and that's it. So
yeah. Okay, I've never experienced before. Go on.
So the next one was the CIPD's FAQs around protecting your workforce when they go back. I mean, this is a massive issue. And actually, a very good friend of mine, David Martin, who's a partner at an employment law firm, Thompson's, who represents the little guy, he was on the radio last week with Charlie Mullins, the founder of Pimlico Plumbers, to argue about this no jab, no job whole thing that he's been preaching. You're not getting a job if you're not working with us if you haven't had the jab. I can understand his position, but you just can't really do that. Anyway, I thought the CIPD's response on this was all measured. And I would go and have a look. I know it's really for the UK, isn't it? But I would go and take a look at it, even if you're outside the UK, because it's a really professional example of how to advise companies and the best things to think about and, you know, the pros and cons of doing things in a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really important. We've had a few discussions in the group about, you know, what the employer's rights are and what the employee's rights are when it comes to COVID-19 vaccination and so on. Like, are you in a position where you're able to prevent staff members from coming back to the office because they've not been vaccinated or have chosen not to be vaccinated? And then, of course, everyone immediately takes the side of the employee and says, look, your employers can't force this. But then you think about it again, and the employer has a duty of care to the employees on staff, I mean, on premise. They need to be protected. So, you know, you can't have a mix of people that are vaccinated, not vaccinated, or having different policies of how they're treating and dealing with the pandemic in the same building. So super complicated. It's a minefield. The CIPD, which is the Chartered Institute for Personnel Development, in the UK, has published a really handy FAQ. So I think a must read for anybody who is in the UK and under UK, sort of England, the laws of England and Wales. But I think anybody else could take inspiration from it, because there's things you can pick and choose out of that that's going to be useful for you. So do check it out.
Okay, just on that note, I also read Elad Gil's blog, mm-hmm. Back to the Office blog, and he suggested that sentiments changed a little bit, and there's a lot of people who were, initially enjoying working from home and had made that transition quite nicely, but they're actually really looking forward to going back. And that's, I think, the opposite of what I'm seeing in some cases, but I was in an event yesterday where a lot of people were saying that they're looking forward to going back to the office. and certainly having that choice. It was a lot of text in the blog. It wasn't easiest to read, but it was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really cool plug post. I mean, Steve Ward mentioned this last week, didn't he? Where he talked about there was generally a shift of focus from, you know, all this remote-only optimism. And it seems that, you know, towards the end of last year, beginning of this, a sense of that, you know, maybe we've had enough of working from home and we want to have some sort of interaction or experience with our work colleagues. So it's very interesting to observe. Elad Gil is I believe he's one of the very early senior execs at Google and stuff like that. So he's like super well-connected person in the US, at least in tech startup scene. And he's kind of said, look, we think that's happening as well. And he had a really interesting way to describe what the future models might look at. And in particular, I liked his kind of put an additional nuance to what kind of remote working that might be. It's not just one style of remote working. Yeah. Is it 3 days on office, 2 days away, or is it turn up anytime you want? And when you think about those two models, they're like radically different. Radically different in terms of whether it's feasible for people, how it works in terms of vibe. I mean, I can imagine the, you know, turn up whenever you want type of approach, you're going to do it, but you're not going to meet people that they're not going to sync with you, basically. Do you know what I mean? You might rock up thinking, yeah, I'm going to have a good time with my team, and you turn up, none of your team are there. So you'll stop doing that. So maybe the way to do it is going to be, look, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you're in the office or something like that. And then you're going to get other people kicking off and saying that's not good enough or whatnot. So loads of things to talk about.
You know, there are going to be loads of problems with this going back to the office. Absolutely loads of problems. But I'll tell you what, there's not going to be as many problems as there were transitioning from working in an office to within 7 days, the whole, you know, everybody's working from home. So if we manage to do what we've done back in March last year, we'll be able to create the right kind of models for our companies to go back. Going back shouldn't be as difficult as having to do what we did at such short notice last time.
Right, yeah. So you're saying we'll just use a lot of the learnings having shifted away to kind of bounce back a little bit. I think you're right. It's going to be a smoother return than we might have imagined. And definitely, depending on your personal circumstances, your home circumstances, it's going to be better or worse. I think a lot of people will embrace it. But then I think, you know, there's going to be people that have really accommodated to the fact that they're working remote and want to stay that way, and companies have got to facilitate sort of make that okay as well. So exciting times, everybody. So anyway, let's move on. Is there one more? I mean, give us one.
Yeah, one more, which is again semi related to this, and it was, I mean, on almost everything. I could spend my entire life just reading content from McKinsey. Again, it's about future of work after COVID, and they've put this sort of proximity score on different job categories. Yeah. And the proximity score links to how likely your job is going to be completely disrupted post-pandemic. And of course, there's a lot of jobs where there's a high degree of contact with other people that they're saying is gonna suffer a lot more disruption. Disruption from either being stopped as jobs, automated as jobs, less people doing the jobs, providing services in completely different ways. And then, the lower the score, the more likely it is you're going to be going back to kind of business as usual. But whether it's, you know, home or remote, that's not the important bit. The important bit is whether you're going to be actually doing the job.
That's a really important model. And I thought the McKinsey framework of proximity is super important. So in other words, let's score all of your occupations, all of the jobs in your business, and figure out, do they actually need to be physically proximate to deliver that job? And if so, then obviously that's kind of an implication onto your policy as to whether you go back to on-premise or not. And if not, then, you know, it gives you more flexibility and ability to move. But anyway, it'll tell you essentially what the how acute your challenges might be when you're shifting one way or the other. Okay, let's move on to this topic. Very quickly before we bring Stuart Jones on, because he has got to go pick up his kids in about 10 minutes or so. So he's not going to have long with us, Stuart. Let's ask you the question firstly, though, Adam. Rejecting candidates, what do you think, like, what's the one thing companies could do to improve the experience of candidates when you're saying no to them?
Use technology properly. Absolutely make sure that everybody gets a message and gets a reason why they're not being progressed. It's not difficult. You can set up 6 different standard messages which link to why the person is not going to be progressed. At least as a minimum, set those up. And this is not the optimum experience I'm talking about, but it hardly ever happens. Press the button that explains why they're not getting taken forward so that they get an email back to say, you don't have enough experience, or you don't have the qualification we're looking for, or you don't have, you know, whatever it might be, as a minimum, so that they can just move on. Because you're just wasting your own time as recruiters by getting people coming, you know, getting in contact with you going, hey, what's happening? Am I getting this job or what? Or, you know, and you're just wasting your own time by not giving the feedback. If you can do it one-to-one, then that's brilliant. But it's almost impossible to do that because of the volume of applications. But can't wait to hear what Stuart says.
Yeah, the minimum viable is to at least get the information plugged in some way, which I think, generally speaking, we're still not doing. Stuart, listen, I know that time is pressing for you in particular. So very quickly, can you introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Yeah, of course, Yeah, great to be on the show today. Thank you. So I'm Stuart Jones. I'm the founder of a business called InSource Talent, but I'm representing the Circle Back initiative today, obviously looking very much at candidate care and candidate feedback.
Cool. Can you tell us a bit about the Circle Back initiative? I think it's a super interesting global initiative. Tell us a bit about that, Stuart.
Yeah, of course. It's just good to be involved with something so positive. You know, after everything we've been through over the last year is quite tough, I think, for a lot of people. And then to be chatting with Steve Gard, who launched the initiative down in Australia midway through the pandemic. And I've been collaborating with Steve for the previous 6 or 7 months anyway on some training products. And then Steve was coaching candidates in Australia. He kept getting the feedback that, you know, people were preparing cover letters, CVs, going through application processes, getting into interview stage, and then just either not hearing back or being ghosted, you know, further down the kind of process. And I think Steve himself had some experience of that as well, where, you know, speaking to companies and then just not hearing anything back. So I think he just decided enough was enough, actually, guys. And he thought, look, there's got to be a better way of doing this. So he spoke to some of his clients about an idea around circling back to candidates, maybe having some kind of pledge in place that, you know, was a commitment, was a statement they were happy to make, put on their website, and just let candidates know that if you apply for a job with our organization, that your application is in safe hands. You know, at least we are guaranteed to get back to you at these stages of the process.
Right. So let me get this right, Stuart. This is like a charter or some sort of agreement with companies that do recruiting. And those companies that have committed to it are saying, if you apply, we're going to give you a response, come what may. That's the commitment. And therefore, you get the badge to say, circle back, you're in there. Is that more or less what it is?
That's it. Yeah, 100%. So it's a pledge, which is now focused around 5 minimum standards. And you make that pledge, you get to display the badge on your careers website, you get to use the wording in your job adverts and on social. And yeah, like I say, it is a statement, it's a commitment to the candidate side.
Okay.
Brilliant.
I think it's brilliant, but I'm also going to say, look, there's going to be a bunch of companies that have said, yeah, this is a great idea, I'm going to commit to it. And then they're like, oh, crikey, we haven't done it because they don't have the capacity or they underestimated, you know, how they are meant to actually implement it. How has that been managed, Stuart?
Yeah, so I think to begin with, and I've got to say, look, this is very much a work in progress. It's Steve's baby down in Australia. I'm kind of lucky to be involved with it here as the kind of the face in the UK. To begin with, guys, it's, you know, it's self-assessment. This is the pledge. These are the standards we expect you to stick to. And then when you sign up, we do ask you to kind of document which systems and how you put that in place. Of course, you know, no system or no process is going to be 100% robust. So, you know, candidates can slip through the net from time to time. What we said to members at the moment is that, look, if we get the odd candidate getting in touch saying I've applied and I've not heard anything back, then we will flag this up to you. and it is up to you to look at your internal processes. If it becomes a repeat offence, and obviously, you know, it's kind of happening on multiple occasions, then we do obviously withhold the right and just to withdraw the accreditation and obviously say, look, guys, for now, until you've got that process sorted, we'll have to kind of take you out of that community.
You know what? That actually might work, like properly, in the sense that it gives, like, I can see an additional incentive because companies will get a reminder from the community to say, look, we've had a report of this candidate's applied who, you know, has not had a response. And then they can go back and it's almost a reminder for them to re-examine their process and improve it that way. And hopefully the candidate will get a response and the candidate can do a little bit of policing for you, I guess, in the sense of, you know, monitoring what's going on. You don't have to be overly technical. It's like literally a case where we're making the pledge publicly and then being held accountable publicly.
Yeah, that's what it is. So we've got the Circle Back Initiative website. That's kind of up and running. Any candidate can go on there to check who are the members in Australia and currently UK and Ireland. And we've got plans to kind of push into the US next, which is really exciting. And it's amazing how this is just kind of gathering momentum. I mean, it feels like it's the right thing to do. And obviously it's come along at the right time where I think there's a lot of anxiety and stress on individuals who are applying for roles. So I think companies are beginning to get that a bit more.
Which companies are kind of in there? I mean, is it agencies that are in here, or is it direct employers, or is it a bit of both?
So it's developed as we've gone on, actually. So to begin with, it was entirely employers. So our kind of wall of champions at the minute is entirely employers who have made that pledge, you know, under their own brand. We've been contacted by agencies, we've been contacted by service providers and RPOs and even tech vendors who've said, well, listen, we've got a piece of kit here that absolutely delivers against some of the standards you guys have put in place. And so that's being developed as we speak. There's going to be an agency charter. There's going to be a tech vendor charter that platforms can kind of look into. And the other development recently, very recently, we've just had our first platinum member sign up for Steve down in Australia. Now that does take things to a slightly different level. We're going to start auditing companies, doing the mystery shopping piece, checking the processes and kind of feeding back on that experience as we go through.
You know what? I just go on and go ahead.
I was going to say, for an RPO or an agency, this is a real badge of honor potentially, because if they can say they've got your accreditation or your logo, they can talk to, you know, potential customers about that and show that they're good at doing these things and they're providing best practice. One question is about sectors, because I'm going to make a guess that certain types of sectors where candidates are more in demand than others are maybe even more focused on this than others. Is that right?
Do you know what? We've seen employers from all across the kind of the industry and the economy interested in joining the initiative. So, I mean, just in the UK alone, we've got people from the hotel sector, from the housing sector. We've got people in technology and assessment and some recruitment services. It's hard to kind of pick out any trends with it yet. And, you know, and kind of the really nice thing about this is really small organizations have seen this and are jumping into it. And then, you know, really, really big organizations and big brands are beginning to kind of pick up on it now. So LinkedIn down in, you know, Australia have just kind of signed up, and Coles supermarkets down there who are huge, right?
Yeah.
You know, massive volumes of recruitment. And like I said before, it just seems to be you've caught the right message at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's just the right thing to do.
Well, every single tech and healthcare company out there needs to be doing this now, needs to be getting involved with you. That's just my advice to any tech and healthcare recruiters out there.
Yeah. And basically, it's anybody can just apply, is it? I mean, how does it work, Stuart?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways. I mean, obviously, if you want to get in touch with me in the UK, then I can chat you through what's involved being part of the initiative, the minimum standards we have in place. It's really simple. You can have a look at the sign-up form. If you can evidence against those five standards, then fantastic, you're in. Check out the website, you know, circlebackinitiative.com. You'll see some information there. You might see some of your competitors already signed up, so that's obviously an instigation to get involved. Yeah, it's all quite straightforward and simple at the moment.
Stu, you mentioned the stuff like the five pillars. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what are these pillars then?
Yeah, so when Steve first pulled it together, he looked at those kind of touch points where you think, okay, where is our obligation to candidates as an organization? Where do we absolutely need to let the candidate know in terms of the outcome of their application. And so his first standard that he came up with was the obvious one. If you apply for a role, you absolutely deserve to receive some kind of acknowledgement to let you know that your application has been received. So you're not wondering a week or 2 weeks down the line, well, maybe it didn't make it through, you know, maybe it's in junk, maybe it's disappeared somewhere. So an acknowledgement that it's been received, with the caveat that you're not allowed to put in that acknowledgement that only successful candidates will hear back, or if you haven't heard back in a couple of weeks, then please assume you've been unsuccessful. So all of our members are not allowed to include phrases to that effect in their communications. Second standard then is, as you move through the process, if you go through any kind of screening, whether that's an online screening assessment, whether it's a telephone interview, that you'll receive at least a written outcome based on the result of your assessment. And let's face it, there are levels within this. You know, as the minimum standard is what we ask companies to hit. I think we'll encourage people to go above and beyond. You know, a really grim automated message from your ATS can tick the box around the fact that you've been unsuccessful on this occasion. But, you know, if you think about moving up, just the intelligent organizations will want to kind of make that feel warm and humanistic and brand that. They'll want to make sure there's links in there to their social pages and their talent communities. You know, you want to make sure this person really doesn't have to apply again in an ideal world. So you think about the levels that you start to apply on this. I think the other one then is, if you kick it forward and say, well, it's not just about letting them know about the outcome, and it's not about plugging our brand, but actually what can we do as a positive step forward for candidates, then to give them some insight on, well, how did you perform? Or maybe just some general job seeker resources helps them, you know, kind of accept the rejection in this case, but then take a positive step forwards. And I'm even fascinated at the minute to wonder if any companies out there are doing anything that is very focused around candidate, sort of not mental health, but mental well-being, and just aware that, you know, there's lots of anxiety, there's lots of pressure and stress attached to job applications. So, you know, should companies be linking through to, mental awareness, mental well-being sites and resources, just to, you know, not as a presumption that people are struggling, but just in case you are, here's obviously some resource you can dip into as well.
Stuart, I know we're running out of time with you, but you mentioned two really interesting points, which I want to just sit on a little bit. Firstly, the idea of the candidate accepting the rejection. I think that's a really great way of describing what we want to achieve, because what is super frustrating for the candidate and for the recruiter is where there is a dispute or they don't accept it because, you know, the feedback isn't there, or it's a generic message, or there's an empty black hole. Like, people just are freaking out because you got to tell me what it is. If you're able to give quality feedback and explain why you're not going forward, I think most candidates are reasonable enough to understand that they're just not going to get every single opportunity. There's a legitimate reason why they haven't progressed, and they're happy to move on. So accepting the rejection, I think, critical point. And the second issue you mentioned about the stress job seeking, totally different from voluntary job seeking, isn't it? You know, if I'm working right now and I'm like, you know, interviewing away because I feel like it, or, you know, maybe I want to try and, you know, bump my career up a little bit, that's a totally different stress factor to me getting a P45 unexpectedly from my boss and then thinking, how am I going to pay the mortgage? And, you know, with family to take care of and so on. So totally different mindset involved there. Stuart, listen, I'm looking at the clock as much as you. I don't want your kids to be like, where is daddy? Yeah, where is daddy? And I don't want you to be like putting the gas down too hard when you're driving to pick them up. So you have a very good weekend, Stuart. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a proper look at Circle Back Initiative. I think it's fantastic. So thank you for being part of that, Stuart. We'll definitely bring you back at another time when we've got more time, and we'll talk about this some more.
That'd be great. All right. Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Stuart.
One of the things I think is really important to acknowledge is, because the chat on the site here is, there's loads of chat on the site here. It's a really important topic for people. It's really important to acknowledge, though, you simply can't. If you've got 10 people in a recruitment team and each person's managing 20 recs and you're getting 500 applications through for every rec, you can't give everybody a call. You just can't do it. You don't have time, or you get nothing done. You can't even type it out on a personalized email. But what you can absolutely do is set up half a dozen templates and then make use of those have the ability to customize if you think there's somebody's like just on the cusp, but you can't call everybody. It's just not possible.
I agree. I mean, I think that we also have to take into account these volumes. I think it was, we're going to talk about high volume recruiting next week, where we're talking hundreds of thousands of people applying. There's literally no chance, even if you had like 100 recruiters, you couldn't possibly call everybody. You have to deploy technology. Now, your technology suggestion is to say, look, you could probably do something with templating emails. I think we're going to talk about templates a little bit later. Al has actually developed a few, which we're going to look at. But also we can use conversational AI, for instance, which may be a factor here. Like if you've provided a different way in which the candidate can interact with the brand, that can really help, because it could be that they can give you more like timely information. And I really love this product called Predictive Hire. I don't know whether you know this company, Australian company now coming into the UK. Hello to our friends in Predictive Hire, by the way. But they've got like a genius way of giving feedback before decisions made. Now, how have a think about that. I've applied. I've filled in a very quick chat questionnaire via a mobile phone, and they'll give me feedback for my effort prior to making a decision on whether I'm through yes or no. And straight away, I've got some immediate sort of reward for the effort I've put in. They're going to tell you, hey, listen, your answers are great in this area. You're demonstrating, this is the sort of example you're illustrating. This is a nice way to illustrate your skills, etc. They'll give you that report before the decision is made. And they've got outstanding scores in terms of candidate feedback, even when, you know, people generally have not managed to succeed. Anyway, let's bring on some more guests here as we go. But I see like the chat stream like going crazy there. I don't know what's going on.
While we're bringing on our guests, one other thing to mention is, and this is going to sound inhumane what I'm about to say here, but right. you have to also determine which types of people are worth spending more time, more personalized time on providing feedback to. So, for example, I think it's really clear that at a very senior level, if you're hiring into the top 100 positions in your company, everybody should be getting personalized feedback. If you're hiring in areas where people are really hard to hire, like software engineering or doctors, again, people should be getting really quite personalized feedback, whereas there's maybe other areas where it's less important to you as an organization. And I know that's really inhumane of me to say you kind of have to rank humans, but that's a simple fact of effort versus reward.
Let's talk about that, because I don't think it's irrelevant at all. There's a number of considerations, right? How do you vary feedback? Because the utopians will say, yes, everyone needs to get concierge feedback, but all of us practically know that that's not possible to do if you're in a high volume situation. So let's talk about how we vary feedback in a way that is right and feels equitable for the person coming in. And, you know, when do we vary it? Is it seniority? Is it the amount of effort they put in? Is it stage of process? Those kinds of things. Okay, I was going to invite Susanna Fraser on, but I can't see her on the thing there. I think she might not be here. Susanna, if you're there, please make yourself visible, and then we'll bring you on. But okay, in the meantime, we've got two other guests which have been on before, two of our favorites. It's Christine. Christine, how are you doing? And Alla Pavlova. Christine, let's introduce yourself first. Who are you, and what is it you do?
Sure. Hi, everyone. So I'm Christine. I lead recruitment for product and technology teams at the Financial Times. I just reached my 3-year mark, which is very exciting. And there's still a lot keeping me busy. So super interesting conversation, and thanks for inviting me back.
Great stuff. Thanks a lot, Christine. And Alla, how are you? Good to see you. For the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. So happy to be here. Yeah, my name is Alla Pavlova. I'm an intern recruiter at Miro. I also have small projects like building Slack community in Amsterdam. It's actually a small project, but taking the most time when you build the tech communities. I'm based in Amsterdam, and I really, really like the topic, and so I'm really looking forward to some outcomes out of this show.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. So I want there's one angle I want to draw on here. This concept of, you know what, we need to be more concierge with the rarer candidate. Now, that is a tough one to swallow, isn't it? Because there's no reason why we should do that other than our own self-interest, because we know this person is a rare skilled candidate. We may want to bring him back at some other point. We also may not want to upset him or her in case they go and talk bad things about us. So we concierge that on self-interest. What are your thoughts on that? Let's go to you, Christine.
Yeah, I think I completely agree and actually really resonated with that. So recently when we came back, Q1, we had over 40 roles that we're working on. So I think I really resonated with what Adam was saying earlier. It depends on the technology that you have. And ultimately, we look at it depending on A, where they are in the funnel, and B, the seniority of the role. So case example, at the moment, I'm working on a couple head of data science roles, head director of product roles. And these are really senior people, people who are influencing, you know, strategies. And even if they're not relevant for us, they could be a potential client in the future. So it's really, really crucial that we're able to give them the kind of, I guess, black tie experience, if you will. But recently, I've got one kind of example I can give. So we were looking for a junior product designer. We had over 600 applications. So we knew in December that we'd be out for most of December because obviously everyone's off and there's no interviewing. So even if there's no feedback, we should still give them feedback, hence the mass emailing and saying, thanks for your time for applying. We will get back to you early next year. And that was great. So how we looked at it was just lower down the funnel. So Anika, who is my colleague, the top 40 candidates who made it through from the 600, she personally took the time out and actually edited it with just one or two lines, like, why didn't you make it past the initial screener stage, gave them constructive feedback on their portfolio, and then, you know, narrowed it down to the final seven who went through interview, who then got the personal phone call. But what a positive feedback we had from that was one of the 40 candidates who got rejected actually posted on LinkedIn and said, I've never been so happy to get a rejection email before. A shout out to, big thank you to the team at FT. We didn't even get it because we weren't tagged in it. But weirdly enough, Anika's sister is a product designer. She saw it being circulated in their product design circles, and it came back to us 2 weeks later after the post got posted. So that was really, really great for us. And it was just a little, you know, cheering within our team. But that's a prime example of why we need to make sure that we give them feedback, even if it's just one sentence, you know, embedded in your ATS. So yeah, that's what I wanted to share.
You know what, that's a really great example, and what a wonderful way to like genuinely build brand, right? You've got like this unsolicited feedback from a rejected candidate. We all know that candidates that get the job are going to say wonderful things immediately having signed the contract. Of course they are, right? But where someone's got to know here, they've been rejected and they've felt so impressed that they've nonetheless gone on public record to say this company is ace. So you can't really put a number on how valuable that that thing is. You'd almost like digitally frame it, like you'd screen cap that message and make sure.
And that's why I'm reading it out as we speak. And I just look back on it on my bad days and I just look at it just to give me a little boost.
If you can, Christine, it'd be cool to share that message in the chat stream. Go ahead and share it here. I'd love to see it, what they said.
Can I just ask Christine a further question on this?
Sure.
There's a concept in marketing. Well, it's actually a concept in customer success or customer service, which is called next best action, NBA. And next best action is the theory that people you might want to keep in contact with, they've always got something next that they can do. Mm-hmm. So in your example where that person posted a message on social media and said, like, shout out to the team, they didn't even tag you, but great work about the team at FT, at least I got a good message back. Other people will have seen that and they'll be interested in FT as a result. But that person who posted that message, if it's somebody who, you know, you probably won't hire them, then okay, you might not want to give them any next action. But if it's somebody who, you know, could be good for other roles within FT at some point in the future, do you give them something that is a next step? Like, can they sign up to keep in contact or anything like that?
That's a really good idea, actually. No, not at the moment. I think we are quite tied with like Workday, which is our applicant tracking system. And then we will usually say, obviously, we'll keep you in mind if something similar comes up. But that is kind of within the remit of us and the talent team. Like, we need to be able to be in a position to forecast, like, okay, we know there's a similar role that may come up and that's where your skill set may be a better fit for. But I like that. I might actually steal that idea from you.
Just wondered if there's a next best action for these people who could be future advocates and good for future roles, maybe.
Yeah, and actually, I see a question in the channel, Mike. That's super true. And actually, what we found last year was when they're embedded in our rejection emails, we actually give a freebie access to content at the FT, because obviously it's behind a paywall, it is a paid product. So we were thinking potentially it could be a great way, not only just from a Canada perspective, but also to acquire new customers as well. So that was something that we did last year.
All right. On that note, I mean, we'll move to I want to ask Alan the same question, but this is worth sitting on just a little bit further. Are sort of B2C businesses better at candidate experience because they already are thinking along those lines when they're, because they're dealing with the mass market? So in other words, they are more sensitive to it because they're marketing to, I don't know, you know, telecom. You know, I remember Virgin Media being like one of the canonical examples, wasn't it? Because they didn't they do some sort of research to say, yeah, bad candidate experience actually directly translates into people canceling their subscriptions or something. So it's like direct business benefit. So B2C, does it actually influence the importance of candidate experience in your TA team based on your business operations of it? Anyway, I want to move on to the main topic here. So not the main topic, but the thing we were talking about, which was, do we vary our feedback based on how hard the candidate is to recruit in terms of skills? Ala, you've been hiring generally on tech, so all of these people are quite hard to hire. But do you like think, oh yeah, is it just another full stack developer? We'll give him the generic stuff we'll do for that. Oh shit, this person's like an AI PhD person. We need to totally get all over it. Is that something that is formally the case, or is it something informally the case, or is it not the case?
Yeah, I've tried to build some kind of way how I approach it. And for me, to send a rejection, it's approximately the same like to send a reach out. So it has a structure and it will always have the personal message. I know it's going to take a lot of time. I know that everyone agree with the high volume. Also, like the company Miro right now, you know, so many roles open. So it's hard to keep, but I have to, because it is decided by myself, like this is the company culture, right? So I have to represent the company well, and I have to treat the people that I'm going to reject even better than the people that I'm going to move forward. So because these people will become my, like, you know, future candidates, clients, or, you know, they can recommend someone. So I actually put the efforts equally. The same like when I send a reach out, I'm hoping that all 100 people will come back to me, right? So, and I will spend enough effort to try to get that. So the same I will do for the rejections. I will have thank you note. I will have the reason as specific as possible. And actually for rejecting the technical specialist, I found it a little bit easier, because most of the time it's something that I can really bring as a real reason, like sorry, we're using AWS and your experience with this one is not going to work out with us very well. And I try to like to make it as a company culture, like rejections, it's part of how we treat people. And I actually came a little bit further, and I tested a little a couple of video rejections, so I still don't know what people feel about it. For me, it was it didn't take a lot of time because I wanted, like, I was inspired to do that. But for like 10 people I sent it, so I asked their opinion. They felt that felt actually interesting. So I don't know. I don't feel like I'm being rejected by the email, and I face like just the email. But to be honest, I still have mixed feelings, but I will try to experiment on it.
So tell us again, Ala, on this last part, you're sending like a recorded video with the rejection,
yes,
right? So
it's
you're
more saying, small reach out. Mm-hmm. You send like a video reach out. You use Loom or whatever. So I use the same, but for rejections.
Yep. Interesting, folks. What do you think of that? I mean, we've been candidates before. Is an email, written email, explaining your rejection better, or is a phone call better, or is a live video better, or is a recorded video better? Bear in mind, a live video is going to be hugely expensive in terms of time, and I don't think you can really set that expectation every time. for a rejection. Maybe it's suitable. We'll talk about when the in-person high sort of commitment is the most important thing, because we've got to measure energy, right? I think I posted something on LinkedIn the other day about energy in, energy out. It was a complete failure of a marketing gimmick. You know, don't talk about the laws of thermodynamics if you want people to sign up to your webinar, Hong, as a lesson for you. The concept was, if you are going to, like, you should basically put equalize the energy. If the person has put minimal energy to you, which, by the way, candidates can sometimes do, they send out mass applications, right? Oftentimes it's like, dear sir, check out my application, totally relevant to the role. I don't think that person deserves anything more than a generic response. Because they've not paid any energy in, so they don't get energy out. Whereas someone who has like custom written a message and they've sent, you know, really thoughtful sort of application, you need to respond kind of in kind as much as you can. So energy in, energy out. What are your thoughts on that concept? Over to you as well, Adam. Thoughts on this?
I kind of agree, but it's very difficult to measure. I mean, somebody might send you one sentence, but they've spent 3 hours constructing it. You know, so I think it's quite a bit. I mean, I do appreciate what you're talking about, but also you can't automate that, really. You can't set up Workday to say, if somebody looks like they've spent half an hour finessing this, then give them a better message or let me know so that I should give them a video or something like that. I think it's pretty difficult to do, but yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. Can I ask a quick question to Ala though? Just about the video, because I think the video response from you is a great idea. And sorry, Ahang, I've just kind of hijacked your question here because the other people haven't answered the question. But Ala, quick question about the video. Do you have like 6 or 8 different videos for different scenarios and you choose which one to send to the person? Or do you do it for the individual at the time? You do it for every individual.
So that will be very hard, but I will aim for it because I don't care. I will give energy to everyone. So that's my approach. So answer your question, energy to everyone who approached me. I have 6 videos that I recorded. So, and so I use only 3 of them for hard cases. You know, you have to put effort there, and everyone who are really like had a chance to screen, and so at least the person passed the test assignment for me. It's a lot of efforts from the candidate, and then like to record 3 minutes video, so that doesn't feel for me like very bad. And then I send the email follow-up like, hey, this is the detailed report about the what did you do on this assignment well and what could be improved.
That's really cool. I like the feedback with the email is like the cherry on, not even the cherry on top. Maybe the main thing is that, but the nice touch is the personal video as well. I think that I'd be surprised if people are upset with that. I mean, it depends on how comfortable you are on video, I guess, but we're all getting better at it. And to record a video to say, hey, listen, sorry, Adam, really appreciate what you did, but the news is this. I'm going to write you an email to explain why that is, and then just send that video. It costs you 10 seconds, but it's like, definitely this person has stepped out of his or her day to do that. And you've got like evidence that that's happened. It's not auto-generated. So here's the thing with automation. I'm a big fan and believer of automation, but we don't like to receive it. And we don't like to receive it when it's pretending to be customized. So this goes down to the theory of the human... Was it the labor theory of value? In other words, we value stuff where we think the person has put time and effort in. And where the person hasn't put time and effort in and have pretended to do so, we feel as if we've been tricked. This is a big challenge, I think, going forward. And I think it's probably a challenge for general templating or mail merging type of behavior. I don't know what you three think about that. The general feeling.
It's about the difference between good and bad experience design. If you're a good experience designer, then it may or may not feel like it's been automated, but you're not going to care because actually you quite appreciate what you've received. So if you're clumsy with words, don't try and do it. That's what I think.
Yeah, agreed. So in my previous role, again, this is back to the tech. We had Lever, And Lever was great. You know, we had several different rejection templates depending on where you are in each process. So obviously you can personalize it as well. You can add a couple of one-liners. With a current system, aka Workday, it's very generic. So we can't even personalize it. So let's say if the disposition, it said another candidate was hired, they just get a generic can like, sorry, you weren't hired into the role, which is a little bit frustrating, I think, because obviously the upper end of the funnel, that's okay. But as you go later on, like past first stage, second stage, I will send a personal email. But in terms of kind of experience, it's not great because you get that templated email and another email from myself. So that's something we always kind of thinking about, like how can we make the tech work in our favor?
Well, I didn't even realize that. And this is not to obviously pile on to any vendors, because some of them have using old technology and all the rest of it. I'm sure they're working on improving that. But imagine if you have a system where rejection email, you can only set one template and it's just universal, irrespective of whether someone has literally spammed a random application in without looking at the job ad, compared to a person who's gone through a 5-stage interview, did a presentation, you know, had a chat with the CEO or whatever, but they're still having to be rejected on the system and auto trigger an email out. It's like, oh my goodness. That's not good.
I just said we had to like now just disable the notifications for a few of them, as it goes later on the process, just because it's just not a great experience at all.
Okay.
Absolutely. I've got another question about tech and automation. So, you know, we've seen it on LinkedIn. We've all seen it about like messages from candidates, like shock horror. I was rejected by the algorithm. Right. I was rejected by Workday in particular. That's, you know, I see that a lot. I got rejected by Workday. Right. So the thing is that there's people responding to that going, no, that doesn't happen. You know, technology doesn't reject you, your application. 100%, it absolutely does. Not 100% of the time, but it absolutely does in a lot of cases. A lot of companies are using technology which vets the CV as it comes in, matches it against the job, and then determines what message the person gets and whether they get rejected or not. How do we create transparency around this, and how do we approach the subject? Because we've got to tell the truth about it. We have got technology in a lot of companies. I'm not sure about in yours, Alan and Christine, I don't know if you are using anything like that, but certainly a lot of people are. Any comments about that?
Yeah, that's, you know, sometimes even candidates reaching out to me on LinkedIn and asking, hey, I just received rejection from your company. Is it checked by recruiters or it's sent automatically? You use some AI. So I think we should aim in a way like to use AI and to make our life more efficient and to spend more time and energy on actually, you know, on other stages. And I hope we will get reduced from the, you know, CVs, because I personally don't think it's the best way to assess the person if it's a good for a job or not. My suggestion would be that even when you send this message from the system, you add a little bit more human message in there. So I'm sorry, this didn't work out because of this and that. So it's not personalized, it's automated. Maybe send it like setting the expectation for the candidates that the screening, the CV screening is something that's templated, automated, but the rest of the things are something that you're really putting the efforts. Maybe if candidates know that's it's going to be like that, it makes them feel okay, so I was rejected by that, but I will try to reach out to a recruiter on LinkedIn and get the attention. It's also fine, I think.
Because I know candidates that are, I mean, I've met people in the last few months, I've met people who are deliberately structuring their CV so that they believe it's going to get straight through to the, you know, to the recruiter rather than to get stopped at the tech phase.
That's, as a lot of people have stepped, as you say, Adam, a lot of people have stepped in to say, look, that doesn't, and being overly categorical in my view in denying the impact that technology has in potentially screening stuff out. The truth is you can sometimes set rules in applicant flow. You can say this person needs to have ticked this box or needs to have these keywords in. You can do keyword type searches also. That's a simple default of saving a search on your ATS and applying it to applicants, which from an applicant point of view looks like, yeah, the system is screening me out. So you're right, Adam, when you're saying we shouldn't just deny the fact that technology is a huge a factor, or we use technology in this way to support managing the flow of candidates in. What isn't happening is that there isn't like a sentient machine saying yes, no, maybe on these candidates. It's just obeying a set of rules that human beings have set. But for the candidate's point of view, yeah, you can probably hack that. You know, you can
with 10 pages, you know, with the old technologies and new parts.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do stupid stuff like that to keyword stuff. I mean, look, we know it from SEO and all this type of stuff, right? Just literally have a nonsense CV. It doesn't have to be read English. You make it like what you think machine readable and see if you can get through that system. With the knowledge, of course, that at some point a human being will read it.
I hate those CVs, though. Those CVs are so terrible.
But you can have a page. You can have a page at the end. You send in your PDF. There's a page at the end which looks like it's completely blank, but it's just tons of white text keywords written in it, and you hack it. On the concept about you talked about ticking the box, Hung. I want to just quickly talk about what Jacob said on the side panel about the concept of what he calls flip the script. You're getting a lot of applicants coming in. So what do? You flip the script. I've heard this described as you knock out questions, and the very first thing that you do is, and you can put a decision tree in here, have you got more than a year's experience in doing this job? If the answer is no, you get an automatic message which says, really sorry, can't progress you. Have you got this particular qualification that means you are a chartered accountant? If the answer is no, you get a message, really sorry, we can't progress you. You can set up, again, it's all about the experience design. You can set this all up at the front end so that somebody doesn't actually get to the application phase. I wonder, have any of you done anything like that? And what do you think about it?
I definitely haven't, but I think that sounds like, I think, firstly, a really sophisticated and something we should do. What we do is a lot more manual. So once we've maybe tailored, let's say, the 600 down to 200, we will then send them questions, which obviously is quite a manual process because we'll need to send them the questionnaire, go through the questions ourselves, and then from their shortlist to the next stage. And I think what we're also seeing now more is we're getting more and more irrelevant candidates applying to a lot of different roles. So I can definitely see the value in implementing something like a decisions tree right up front.
Yeah. I think we need to do it, don't we? Because essentially we can't control applicant flow, particularly if we start moving to this remote anywhere type of approach. Suddenly the entire world is your labor pool. We can expect that means that, you know, the volume of candidates will increase, in which case you're going to need to get technology in there to help you. And the knockout questions, I think, are being automated. I mentioned Predictive Hire before. That's what they do. They basically allow you to set a bunch of automated questions on a mobile device, and the person just interacts with the text. And you can ask those questions. They can respond, and from that, they can determine whether you're going to go forward or not to a human interface at that stage. So super interesting. Okay, let's talk about running short on time, Adam. So let's move into the next point, which is like, what is the appropriate? Can we match the stage to the appropriate response? So. Applicant comes in from an advert. What is the appropriate response? Is it an automated, like, yes, no? Is that okay? What are your thoughts? Like, quick answer on this. You've set a job ad out. You've got an inbound. How do you respond to rejection there? What's the appropriate thing?
To me, it entirely depends on the level of the role, whether they're in-demand talent or not really. It depends on a variety of other factors. And I've got to throw diversity in here as well. This is a really, really important thing. If people are getting feedback, if you've only got time to roll out the red carpet to certain, you know, types of people, then that's another way to think about it. Is we want a diverse group of people in our company. We're going to give them a special experience, and that ties in with what I was suggesting, Christine, about having a next best action. Yeah. If somebody's a particular represents a group that we want to bring more people like that into our organization, we make sure that they get a red carpet treatment. Mm. I didn't quite answer your question, but
you did. You're basically saying there should be, you should have a two-track way of doing it. In other words, there may be a standard yes, no on an email, but you kind of have the idea that certain groups might require a concierge service based on various factors. Like, is this a high value, hard to hire person? That for whatever reason we've rejected, maybe it's a visa issue or something like this. I don't know what it is. Go and spend a bit of time with that person. Similar to your view, Ala, I think when you know you spend time because you know this is a member of a community that you care about, and you might be looking to recruit from this community in future, you can over index on that and spend a bit more time. So I get that type of two-way way of doing it. Okay, let's go to the next stage. The application has been successful. The person has conducted some sort of interview, but it's a no. So there's a video interview. You've decided that's a no, or the hiring manager says a no. What's the appropriate rejection for that candidate? Go to you on that, Christine.
I'd always say phone call, like even just a quick 5 minutes, like thanks, but you know, this is the initial feedback. Yeah, definitely a phone call at that stage. I think once they've invested time in it.
Right, cool. So basically, if they've actually spoke to a human being at some point and being interviewed, they need a human being synchronously having a chat with them.
Exactly.
An email is not sufficient. I think that's probably, it feels right to me. Okay, what if they've gone and done a technical test, or they've actually properly spent time, like they've like done 6 hours, or they've prepared a presentation, they've actually done and produced output. What's the appropriate response? Go to you on that, Ala.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I will answer the previous question because I wanted to add something. I wanted to say that on the technical interview, sometimes, and even in my screening, if it's possible, I can provide feedback straight away. And it saves so much time. So if I see the candidate is not feeding, like if I see that it's the candidate is going to handle it, so I can give it. And the same I'm telling to the teams, like if you, by interviewing the candidate after 45 minutes, if you decide it's not going to go, and if you feel confident in they need to pass some trainings, right? So it happens quite often right now. In terms of the like in regards to your question, so it's a rule, it's a must have. I think it should be the golden rule for every recruiter in the company. If you ask the engineer to make an effort and to work on the assignment, they usually work on this a minimum 8 hours. So it should be an answer. So you have to help and train your team to provide this answer to this candidate. So three main points why it didn't pass. If it's live coding, if it's assessments like assignments that they do at home, or if it's a hacker rank, feedback is a must have. Because when I googled, like, you know, the best way to reject, like, or how I was rejected in a very nice way, I found only three really good examples, but I found like 100,000 bad results. You know, it says something.
Yeah, and let's not forget, at any stage of being rejected, it's a tough blow. You know, you've put yourself out there, you've appealed to be judged, and you've been assessed to be inadequate for whatever reason. That's feel awful, and no one walks around embracing that experience. So I think it's very important that you, at the very least, understand what that is, and as you say, Ala, put the effort in to it. Okay, we've got to move on quick, folks. So there's a bunch of questions that we're going to deal with, but actually, before we do that, Ala, you have actually developed some templates. Okay,
yes,
so I want you to share those on screen, because I think they might be useful for folks who are writing email responses. And I think this might be good to chew on, and then we're going to go on to the questions. So can you share screen up?
Yes. Yep. I'm sharing the screen, but you need to tell me if you see it. So it's a mirror board.
Okay, I think we can see it. Yeah, let me just increase. Yeah, we can do it. That's it.
I can try to increase it as well. So just to quickly, like, I develop for myself always, like, what are going to be the response. Like, if it's severe review, it could be just written. If it's preliminary screening, so it could be written, but I would prefer to go for a call. So, and et cetera. So assignments, like, the golden star, because it always should be, like, you know, a call and written confirmation and et cetera. So I just decide what is the commitment from my side is going to be on rejection. Then I also develop some small, like, you know, rules for myself, like a personalized message should be in there. I experimented with video rejections. I experimented also a little bit with the trainings on how to provide this rejection by the hiring manager and by the recruiter. Actually, when it's provided by the hiring manager, it's always accepted much, much better and faster. And so today I wanted to share with you quickly some of the examples of the rejections that I do. And please feel free to be honest, like feel free to put the comment, because it's real stuff, right? So I always have like some kind of structure in there. So for example, after the interview with a recruiter, so I can say, I always like say the person that it was a great pleasure or anything. And I say some things like, after careful consideration, we have ultimately decided not to move forward So move forward with a few other candidates because will be a real something that I will add, like in the reach out that you do when you would like to contact someone for a job. Same I will do for the rejection. And this in the brackets, I will put something because we require more knowledge, more exposure to and a couple of things. And then the thank you notes, it's an examples like of the thank you notes. I will choose the one that I think it's more appropriate. That's a small example. Another one is after the assignment. It's also like I explained, like, thank you. I explained that you were not selected. And I write it like that. So we do respect your time and effort. And so we have prepared some feedback that we hope that you will find helpful. And there are also some things after the assignment, like always. And so one of the examples that I developed together with my colleague and friend Enrico. So we made this template to make candidates to feel a little bit better even after they rejected. So we say, like, unfortunately, I'm in the bringer of bad news. Because it's true, right? So we are bringing the bad news. And it feels already like to put it up front, it's like, you know, to remove the band-aid. So, and then we explain, like, your experience and interests, they didn't quite line up with what we're looking for. And here I will add something like personal because of this and this and that, right? So we have decided to pursue other candidates because of that. We know you've got a lot of options when seeking the community where your skills and talents will shine. So we really appreciate that you considered us. So it's also like, you know, saying like, we know that you are like a good specialist, that you are like the other communities also will be happy to have you in a way. And also, yeah, some follow up, like saying like, hey, even if it's not going to work out right now, so let's keep in touch and yeah, continue to master your craft. So I find it something that's the response on these rejections were quite positive. And yeah, I can share in the chat. So I found some nice examples online about some ugly and good and bad, you know, ways how you can reject and ways how you can say people they were not selected. So I hope it was helpful. So I tried to squeeze it all.
That's no, that's really helpful. And Ale, if this is if you're happy for that to be shared in the chat, then please feel free to do that. I think that's a super useful thing. Some quick feedback though. I'll give you some quick feedback. I like the tone of the last message a lot more, because it was a little bit friendlier and a little bit more humane. So I think that was positive. I also don't like the concept of we're pursuing other candidates line, because it may not always be true. It may simply be the person was like not good enough for the job or not the right fit for whatever. And I think it needs to stand on that, on that basis. It could be, you know, we don't need to say you're the person is there. But those templates were great. And I agree with Nicole, they're wonderful to have. And you could basically put them into some sort of a text expander or something like that. So you can rapidly respond to candidates in a fairly sort of customizable way when you need to do so. So very, very useful, Ala. Thank you for doing that research.
Words really, really matter. And one thing that was clear from what you've written there and the description of why you've said the different things is you've actually thought about each sentence and what exactly it conveys. Mm. So I think that's really great.
Words I think it's really great. And again, go back to the workday example. This is why words can be destructive, because if it's just a cranked out template going to anybody for any circumstance, that's just an awful thing to receive. I wonder how much of bad candidate feedback is based on this type of auto-generated ATS, you know, standard universalism. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've got tons of questions to go through, folks. So hang on with us for the time being as we pile through them. Let's go with this. Okay, first question, we've got Svetlana. Svetlana's asking, what's the best way to provide feedback if the rejection is cultural no fit? Oh my goodness, the toughest one. This, you can't get away with all the technical side, Ala.
I was trying to.
this person is technically great, let's say. However, you know what? You know, by bringing this person into the company, this is going to be a toxic individual or a toxic combination if they mixed with the existing staff. How do you handle that? I haven't got the first clue. Everybody, have a thought on this. Anybody, any answers to this?
I think you'll answer. Yeah, Christina, you must
type. Yeah, because I've had to do some recently as well. I think, especially on the technical side, it does happen. But recently, what we have found is a lot of people maybe who are maybe too qualified for the role or feel like if they joined us, they've got so much to give, but they are not aware that within the FT, we've got certain complexities within the environment. So I can be quite honest and I'll say like, look, you know, the team felt you were technically great, but they felt that if you were to join us, you might get bored in the role, that within 6 months time, there might not be enough projects to kind of keep you on your stretch goals. So in those situations, I'll try to angle it in another position. Obviously, I'm not going to fully say you're not a good cultural fit, because actually in a previous role I was at 5 years ago, we actually, the template said, you're not a good cultural fit. The candidate actually called us and said, what does that even mean? Is it because I'm Greek? And it became really, it was really a bad situation. So
well, ultimately, just to be clear, Christine, like we can no longer say this, right? I mean, five years ago, I think maybe you could use the term cultural fit.
Oh my
but
God.
These days, it'll expose you to all kinds of accusations.
Absolutely.
Of some sort of bias. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Somebody could be a neo-Nazi and you just still can't say, you're not a good cultural fit.
No, you just can't do it. And especially sometimes as well, some of our team maybe would find the candidates on Twitter and then maybe not quite agree with certain things that they're posting on social. So they're like, hey, this is really awkward because we found something on their social, on their GitHub, they found some really weird repos. This happened recently as well. They're like, right, we need to reject them. Christine, can you deal with this? So I don't necessarily say, okay, you're not a great culture fit, but we'll say we found something quite incriminating on your social pages that isn't aligned to our values. So
wow.
I would tie it
can
back
you say,
to our values.
Right. So that's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's such a tough one to do.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this? Because this I feel is a really big problem for all of us recruiters. We've had that experience. The truth is 99.9% of the time we BS the response because we're frightened to say the truth. So how do we deal with it? Thoughts?
Yeah. The only reason why we're afraid to say that as well, because the candidates in a way taught us the lesson that we are going to be punished by being honest in a way. So we would like to be transparent. I would like to say to the person, hey, you have to improve your communication. You have to work on the way how you present yourself and the way how you treat other people, right? And I feel like it works both ways. So the more candidates will be willing to accept honest feedback, the more we are going to give it. And to answer the question, I would say that I try to find at least two things that I can that are actual from the feedback, like for example, I'm communication skills or language or some other things, since to post them together to give something else, like if the person, like to imagine that the person is not going to be happy with the job, I don't feel like it's a feedback that is going to help the person to improve in a way. I feel like if I'm going to say that, say, yeah, you made some answer, your answer were too long, I'm sorry, but it makes hard to understand you, imagine that this and that. So but I've been punished by the candidates getting back to me saying I don't agree, why you think my English is not that great, you're also not a native speaker. Oh, that's so hard. But we have to deal with it.
You know what, that's a really tough thing, because when the candidate doesn't accept the rejection, going back to Stuart's point, and they don't continue to argue the case, that's a really annoying, and that's probably the one thing that drives a lot of recruiter behavior, to avoid that circumstance, because it's such a big bleed of time. And at the end of the day, oftentimes it is a subjective decision, and it isn't a case where we can absolutely objectively measure competence. It's not a 100-meter race where you can measure the person in terms of beating a number. Oftentimes it is things like, are they going to fit into team? Okay, we've got to move on because we've got loads of questions. This is related actually to this concept. Who actually provides the feedback? Who is the feedback giver? Christine, it sounds like the developers have threw you under the bus there and said, hey, you got to deal with this. And is that right? I mean, do we push back? What's going on?
It's half and half. I think it depends. If it did get through, say, to the final stages and the engineers have built a relationship with them, I would always push back. But there would be times I think they'd be like, look, I'm not comfortable with doing this. Can you do this? I'm like, fine. So, you know, I think 50-50. I don't tend to own all of it. I try to push back when I can. But most of the time it does, I think, fall on our team because, A, we have a time frame to get back to candidate. We can't wait for 2 weeks and not respond to them. So in those particular scenarios, yeah, I think ideally both of us should take up the responsibility together.
Okay.
I spent quite a lot of time to understand the feedback as well, because engineers or hiring managers who are very, very busy, they tend to say, hey, please reject. I don't think he's a fit. I have to push back. I have to, like, you know, have this, you know, briefings and some, I need to understand the idea very well to be able to communicate it. And that's just time sensitive. So that's what I'm facing as well. To give a proper quality feedback, you have to take it from the people who are giving it to you. Why the person didn't pass.
Yeah, and yep. Just on Tom's point there, absolutely correct. Certain jurisdictions, it would not make any sense to give any feedback, because it would expose your business to a litigation. So that's totally right as well. You have to be sensitive to your local employment and the, you know, general legal sort of environment. Okay, moving on real quick, because time is gone.
Really quick, if hiring managers are going to be giving feedback, they have to be properly trained.
Yeah, for sure.
Because otherwise, they could go seriously wrong.
I'm thinking sometimes I'd be lucky to even get more than one sentence back from the hiring manager. So that's what we have to work with. So definitely agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe you want to take it away from that sometimes as well to protect the company, right? Because if you've got a hiring manager that tells it as it is, quote unquote, you know that person. Yeah. That can totally, like, really put a hole in everything you're doing. So yeah. It could ruin your
Just imagine, like, oh, hi, it's John here calling to give you some feedback. Sarah and Brian just will not like you, so I can't upset them and you're not getting the job.
Yeah,
it's not going to work.
It might happen. Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, maybe it is something we should do. Okay, let's keep going. What is the maximum time to get back to a candidate? I guess what this means is, you know, what is the... is it the minimum time? Like, what kind of time would it be? Person's applied. What is the right kind of time to give some feedback on this?
I mean, ideally as soon as possible. But I would say 2 to 3 days. But I do recognize sometimes there's a bit of dependency. You know, maybe with some roles you've got hiring manager screening, etc. But even if there's no feedback, I think just giving the feedback to say there's no feedback within the week. So it's happened, like the example I gave earlier, where it was Christmas, no one was around for 4 weeks. We would still just message all the candidates and say, look, you know, apologies, everyone's out, we'll get back to you soon.
Yep, that's okay. I think that's right. Basically, it's feedback, just ASAP, just give them updates on where it is. And ideally, that there'll be some sort of tooling which enables a candidate to do self-serve checking in terms of status. And there's products out there that help us do that. We should totally implement them if they're not native to the ATS, because that will solve everyone's time in a great way. Okay, let's keep going.
So really quickly, the one factor which lengthens or shortens your ability to get back to the candidate is the hiring manager's ability to get back to you. Mm. I've said this a million times. You need to have some sort of a service level agreement with hiring managers that if they want support from talent acquisition, they need to come back with feedback within 72 hours or whatever it is. Get them to sign a charter, because it's really important.
Yeah, definitely. For each stage. And actually, you can set the expectations in the automatic reply. So every time the person replies, so there is a confirmation, hey, you got your application. And there you can put, hey, it's going to take us like a week or 3 days or something like that. So when I have like a lot of roles open, so I put this number, like when the person should expect the answer. It also helps, I think.
Okay, cool. Kelly, I'm addressing Kelly here. There's a lot of those questions I think we've already kind of answered. So we're going to move past those. I think the templates will be shared, Ala. So if you're prepared to do that, then please share it in the chat stream. We're going to go to the final question. This is from Martin. Martin said, very quickly, like anybody survey candidates after rejection to evaluate the quality of your rejections?
That's a good one.
I think it's like extending the relationship a little bit too far here. Could you give me some feedback on my rejection to you?
So we send a survey in our rejected templates that's linked to Qualtrics. So we do check it once a quarter just to say, hey, what can we do better? It's less on the actual rejection itself, it's just more about the experience, the interview itself, and what we can do better. So I haven't seen anyone explicitly say, no, your rejection wasn't like on par or what I was expecting, but that would be interesting to know.
I was going to say, it would be weird to say, yeah, you've just been rejected. How do you think I dealt with that?
Yeah.
Okay. But with the video, it's easier, yeah?
Yes. I was wondering like what the feedback is, whether they would actually respond to you like with a thumbs up emoji or with a, like, this is great.
Or with their own video.
Right. Actually, that's maybe set up to the next time, Ala, because I'd be interested to follow your video loom rejection approach to see what you get out of it. Okay. In sense, like, what is the feedback response? Do they personalize something back? Do you see it like shared somewhere? Presumably, they can pick it up and like ping it out. And hey, this is what I got from Miro. I can imagine that happening, which potentially is a bit of marketing, right? So there's lots of like interesting techniques that you can use. There's a friend of mine called Stan Vasovich. Stan, if you're watching this, give him a quick shout out. He basically is really good at trying to think about the next action. Adam, I think he's kind of moved his career in a different direction these days, doing more partnership stuff. But before, he was like really clever in saying, right, rejection is this, but you can get a plus out of this person in a different way. So send them to a community they can join, give them some personal development stuff. Maybe they can, you know, you can convert them into an advocate. Also, Jeff Moore, who ex-Google now moved to Toast, I think, in New York. He is a genius at using the candidate rejection stage to create sort of employer brand advocates. I couldn't get him on to the show because I think he's just moved to a new city, new job, etc. But I'll get him on at some other point if we revisit this topic. Anyway, time out, folks, because we've got to end it there. I just want to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you to Stuart, who joined us earlier. Also to Christine and Alav, thank you for joining us on the show. Have a good weekend, you two. I'm going to say goodbye to you right now.
Thanks
a lot, Alav. Thanks a lot, Christine. And thank you, Susanna. We couldn't get you on. I couldn't actually find you in the thing. I'm not sure whether you were distracted or not, or whether my fingers were too fat and I couldn't find it. Sorry about that. We'll bring you back at some other point. Okay, that's about it. Firstly, I need to apologize to everyone who didn't see it on LinkedIn and Periscope. That's my snafu. I'll go back and figure out why that was. This video will be recorded and available for replay. So please share that with the people who were expecting it on LinkedIn and didn't see it. And that's about it. But I guess... Yeah, what do you think, Adam? All good?
All good. Absolutely love that. Great guests and great chat. I love everything that's to do with communication and you know, content channels and format and the words you use and how you do it and the timing and all of that. So really enjoyed it. Great guests. Loads of stuff from them.
We could have talked longer as well. There's like, it's a deeper topic, isn't it? How do you actually handle this concept of rejecting someone in such a way that is a positive experience from a negative outcome? That's a skill all of us need to know how to do, right? Like, how do you say no to someone and not destroy a relationship? I struggle with that in my personal life, really, which is why we often default to yeses when we shouldn't, right? So huge problem. Okay, final thing. Thank you for watching Brain Food Live on Air. If you enjoy this show, make sure you follow the channel. That's a quick way to always be able to get access to this type of conversational topic. We'll be back next week talking about super high volume hiring. How do you do that when you're getting like 100,000 applicants? We're not talking about overloaded recruiters. We're talking about absolutely overwhelmed recruiting systems. How do you actually deal with it? It's going to be a super exciting show. Make sure, of course, you check out our sponsors, Occupop. If you are still wrestling with a low quality ATS, or you want to upgrade from spreadsheets, Occupop is a great option for you to try. 14-day free trial. Check out the link below. Okay, that's about it, everyone. Have a good weekend. So that was super annoying why LinkedIn Live didn't work. I'm really disappointed. Have I been kicked off LinkedIn Live? I think I might have done. Anyway, it's all right. We still have the video. I'll stick this up on YouTube somewhere. We'll all be good. All right. Have a good weekend, everybody. Show's over.